Hi everyone, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo episode 90, and we have the regular crew back. Not regular, you guys are special. There's
not
nothing
really
regular about you.
Mm-hmm.
We have the usual.
Apparently not.
Yeah, I mean, not too special.
Wow, bitter.
It's not like I've ever played an N64 or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I didn't expect to get as many guests last week as I did. And it all just kind of came together at the last minute, and I thought having a 7-person podcast might be a bit unwieldy, so
oh, no,
I
it's
appreciate
cool.
you guys
it's cool.
tag-teaming out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Together, everyone achieves more.
Well, that would be great, except we weren't together.
No, Sunded. I was just saying we're all cooperating for the good of the show. Man, this is a fascinating way to start the show.
Well, see,
but no, really.
See, but I have a different meaning for the team acronym. Together, everyone against Mets. Huh?
Hence the Lords of Thunder podcast.
Yeah.
All I can say is my idea for the N64 retrospective, somewhat better than the Lords of Thunder podcast.
That's bullcrap, man. All that music I could play in the Lords of Thunder podcast.
Yeah.
Gold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's cutting deep, Johnny.
I'm gonna
you just prove my point.
I'm doing radio trivia, Lords of Thunder. Okay, it's from Lords of Thunder. Trivia question.
Anyway,
Lords of.
So
blank.
I thought since you guys have been out away for 2 weeks or been away from the show for 2 weeks, you've probably all played a bunch of stuff. I've been playing a lot of crazy stuff. I went through a PC binge, gaming binge, and of course Brawl just came out yesterday, so I thought we'd devote pretty much this entire show to new business, and we'll have like a couple things at the end, but for the most part I want us to talk about games, and other than Greg, I think the rest of us all have Brawl.
I do not have it.
Like yesterday. You
mine's
don't
still,
have it?
Mine's still coming in the mail, so yeah, it's coming.
Loser.
Plan aborted.
I got plenty of other stuff to play, so I'm not too worried.
At least Greg has a good excuse.
Well, I decided I got it cheap from LionGames.com for like $42.99. But
I hope they paid for that ad.
Couple of days shipping. Well, ouch. I got to give them props because they do give some cheap stuff. So.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I personally had it pre-ordered a long time ago, and I normally don't like to pre-order games. Actually, I don't normally like to buy games at the game store anyway. But I paid this off with like store credit from trading in shitty review titles after I reviewed them, of course.
Really?
So that's the only reason that I got it from GameStop. So I wasn't planning to go to the midnight thing because I just don't really want to hang out with that crowd. You know, they just piss me off more than anything. Mm-hmm. But I did kind of want to pick it up that night just so I could play it when I got up the next morning. I figured I wouldn't play it for that long when I picked it up. But I went to the store. And I figured, you know, if I show up at like 12:15, the crowd will be gone and I can just walk in, pick it up, and go home. No, I got there and there were like 50 people lined up outside. And I thought about just going home and waiting it out for another half hour, but I was like, whatever, it's not that cold outside. So I got in line, and sure enough, the crowd was pretty obnoxious. There were guys like, well, kick your ass online. I don't even think they knew each other, you know. And I should have been like, not if you don't have his friend code, but...
You don't know, man.
Yeah, I finally got in line, and the manager's running around like, does everybody have a reservation? Because I think they had run out of unreserved copies.
Bull crap. They did not have unreserved copies. I bought one today. They still had 30 left at my GameStop.
Well, I don't know, dude. It just depends on store by store.
No,
you know?
No, they were lying. They're trying to get people to reserve the game. In fact, one of the
Wait. They're trying to get people to reserve the game?
Future games.
When they've already got
future
it in the store?
Future games, man. GameStops live and die by their reservations.
Okay. But they had the game in the store. Why would they need you to
no,
reserve
future
it
future reservations,
if they already
man.
Have
yeah,
a
they,
future
they're game. Trying to establish a sort of credible policy of like, oh, this could happen to you next time when Mario Kart
yeah.
comes
exactly.
out. So you're going to go down there and you're going to be bitterly disappointed because you didn't reserve it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I this way,
okay.
I haven't heard of any...
I get you. I'm not sure if that's actually what the case was.
I haven't heard of
I,
anybody
I
not
point.
Being able to find a copy of it. And cue the emails to Radio
hey.
Free Nintendo. But
Dude, that's what I said about Wii.
I know. No, I was yeah. like, you know,
if they don't have
down.
Enough Wiis a couple days after the launch, then they're not doing their jobs, and they don't deserve your business anyway.
By the way,
I've actually been waiting to put this disclaimer on the podcast. This is the podcast that brought you such predictions as... You'll be able to find the Wii really easily. Halo 3 won't set any records, and Sin and Punishment will never come to the Virtual Console. That's just three. Now, not everyone is responsible for all of those, obviously, but you know, that's just some of the classics that this has brought to the fan community over the 2 years now.
I don't think I ever let the previous cast live down the fact they called me stupid for sitting outside of a GameStop for half an hour on a day I didn't have any classes anyway to get a reservation for a Wii. Ooh, half an hour of my time spent in an air-conditioned building watching Trophy Wives work out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Back to the story.
James, I'll just say you're a genius for doing that, because my experience trying to get a Wii without pre-ordering was absolutely horrendous.
Yeah, pretty much everybody says.
I'll leave it at that.
Okay, let me finish up the story. I'm really close to finishing it. So I finally, the line wrapped up, and I finally got inside the store, and I'm almost up to the counter where I can pick up my copy. And the manager is walking by, and... these kids are like running around. Most of the people there were probably like 15 or 16. And, you know, there are a lot of like goth looking people or whatever. So anyway, somebody said something really stupid on their way out of the store with their copy. They were like, you know, taunting the people in line with their copy. And the manager's walking by, and I just sort of said out loud, well, this is a really mature crowd, you know? And he says, well, you should have been here when Halo 3 launched. And I said, yeah, that makes sense since that was an M-rated game, right? And he did not look happy when I said that.
And the entirety of GameStop has now been banned.
He thought you were impugning his character in some way.
Well, let's just say I'm going to bet that their policy of carding minors to buy M-rated games is suspended on the day that Halo 3 comes out.
Yeah,
I think that's probably why he looked upset when I said that. Because there were probably much younger kids in there for Halo 3 than there were for Smash Brothers. Go figure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Pretty much.
So anyway,
are you calling Halo 3 a kiddie game?
I ended up playing it for like 2 or 3 hours, which is more than I expected. But you guys, what are your launch stories? Well, James, what is your launch story?
For Brawl? Or should I mock the old cast for the Wii again? I mean, I can do either.
No, the Brawl. Oh, let's stay on topic.
My launch story for Brawl was I went out at 2 p.m. today, walked into the store, asked for a copy. The cashier goes, oh, did you reserve one? And I responded, no, I don't need to. At which point the other cashier laughed and said, yep, you're right, and handed me a copy. At which point the manager
nice.
Looked...
But you only picked it up today.
Yeah, but... The implication was that if you hadn't reserved a copy, you'd be fine.
And why didn't you get it yesterday when it was first available?
I didn't have any money.
Oh, okay.
And I was sick. Kind of a double whammy on that one.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah.
And you didn't have Smash.
Well, yeah.
That's like the trifecta of sorrow.
Well, I slept most of the day anyway, so I was good.
Oh, okay. So you just had nightmares about it.
Just had dreams about walking around and playing Brawl and... nightmares about living in Australia where I'll never see the game before I die.
I shouldn't laugh. It's gonna be like plus 2 months on top of Europe. I really shouldn't laugh.
If they're lucky, it'll be plus 2 months. They could be like...
Well, they have to localize it.
Yes. They have to put G'day in it or something similarly obligatory.
Well, the little tornado that Meta Knight makes when you press B, they have to make that spin the opposite way.
Nice. They're very sad. But wait, but shouldn't it be like that in the Japanese version anyway?
Well, James, James, what's your first impression of the game? I mean, I know you haven't had very long to play it, but...
It feels a lot basically like Melee, just more stuff in it.
Are you playing it with the GameCube controller?
Unfortunately, no, because they lost the mold, remember? Playing it...
You don't have any on hand.
I'm playing it with the classic controller. Mm-hmm. Well, I do have regular GameCube controllers, but...
Yeah, it's okay, good.
The cable's not long enough.
Actually, I like it better. I like the shoulder buttons
I don't like how the classic controller feels in my hands.
Well, it's a little small,
Yeah.
For me, I've gotten to where I prefer a little bit bigger, a little more thickness to it, you know, a little more grip, but I still like it.
And the GameCube pad is very lovely sort of ergonomic design to it.
Button placement's really kind of weird. Can't beat that. Generally speaking, with the classic controller, the default setting for the classic controller is crap. So you're going to need to basically realign the buttons.
Mm-hmm. Now, how is the default with the GameCube controller? Like, perfect?
I'd imagine it's probably just Melee over again.
Yeah.
It's the same with Melee. Aren't any new buttons. Yeah. There's no new function. But I think it's still worth going into the control setup and, you know, turning off up jump and things like that.
That gets really annoying. Up jump.
You can change the function of the C-stick, so you can make it, you know, by default it smashes, like in Melee, but you can also make it taunt, or you can make it grab. And I have it on grab, because I think that's kind of handy, actually.
Well, you know, one thing that's really, potentially, it's really obnoxious.
You can use it to throw items, that's the main thing I like about it. Like, you can, instead of, like, pushing left on the main joystick and R and A at the same time, which is what I did in Melee, now I can just flick the right joystick, or the C-stick, to the left, and if I'm holding the sword, I'll throw it to the left, like a smash throw.
Sure.
So that's pretty nice, because I do a lot of item throwing. That's a big part of my game.
Oh, his skills, he's an item thrower?
Yeah.
We're going to have to go register a Jonathan Metz account on Smash Boards.
Whoa. I don't know. Is that like a subset of skill of Smash player?
It might be now.
They've probably thought of everything over there.
Yes, yeah. But
no, I'm not an amazing Smash player because I almost always use random character select. So I never get incredibly good with one or two characters. You know, I have my characters that I'm particularly good with or fond of, but I'm not amazing with one character because I get bored with that.
Who's the best player you've played, Johnny? Do you think?
Yeah. Ever? Probably TYP.
Yeah. Schooled ya?
Well, I mean, I'm sure I've beaten him a couple times. I know I have, but TYP's really good. Yeah.
So don't add TYP's friend code.
Wendy is good.
So don't add TYP's friend code? Is that what you're telling us?
No, I'm looking forward to
it. Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, it's good competition. One thing. But he's, I think he's traveling now. I don't think he probably hasn't picked it up yet. Mm. But I don't know. My first impression of it is it's not that exciting.
No, it's not, actually.
And I kind of expected that because it's exactly what happened with Melee. I remember picking up Melee, and I was really excited for it, even though I wasn't a huge fan of the original Smash Brothers. Like, I rented it once, and I had a good time with it, but, you know, I didn't think it was amazing. But Melee, I remember when I first picked it up, I was pretty excited because I had played it at E3, and I had a lot of fun with it.
Sure.
So I took it back to my dorm room, and I'm playing Adventure Mode or whatever, and I'm like, this is, you know, the controls are kind of floaty, and this is sort of lame, I'm getting tired of it. And then we started doing multiplayer, like a few days after I got it, we finally started to get into multiplayer, and we just kept on playing and kept on playing, and I played it for 3 years after that. So I'm feeling the same way with Brawl, in that, you know, I live alone, and so the first day or two of me having the game, I'm mainly playing it by myself, and it's not that great as a single player game. It's actually kind of mediocre and lame. And Subspace Emissary is better than Adventure Mode and Melee, but it's basically the same concept. It's just longer.
Yeah, does it still feel kind of tacked on? Because that's how I felt about the other one. It just felt sort of tacked on. Yeah, like it was just kind of like they felt like they had to have some sort of single player thing in there, so they just put it in there.
Well,
I appreciate that it's there.
I mean, the level of work they put into it is more significant because it has a lot of cutscenes. I'm not going to say it has a story, but it has a lot of cutscenes. There are so many more levels that obviously they put a lot more time into this than they did in Melee's Adventure Mode.
Yeah.
But it's just still sort of generic, and it feels a lot to me like a Kirby game, and it kind of reminds me of why I don't like Kirby games that much, because the level design is just sort of there. You know, there's not a lot of thought that goes into it. Kirby is usually way more powerful than the enemies and the environments. You know, like, he can fly anywhere, and so there's the level design is almost irrelevant because there's no limitation on what Kirby can do. And Kirby has this ability to get like 20 or 30 different powers, and almost all of them are strong enough to kill any enemy in the game. So it's like a playground almost for you to just mess with the enemies or be creative in how you kill them, but there's not really any challenge. And there's nothing in the level design to really test you or make you think, how do I get over this? Or what am I supposed to do here? And, you know, that's a Sakurai thing, I think.
But, you know,
and Subspace Emissary is sort of the same
way. But, you know, there are parts in levels that you can see and you can't get to them because, you know, there might be an alternate route to getting there, or you have to find...
Yeah, and you'll find that in Kirby, too. But usually the way of getting to that is not very satisfying, and usually what you get when you get to that secret room is not very satisfying either.
It's mostly just been trophies so far, but, you know...
Yeah, that's pretty much all it ever is.
Yeah.
You might get a heart.
I do like
trophies. And it's fun to collect trophies, but I think collecting trophies in Adventure Mode is actually not done very well because... they're so small on the screen that you can't even see what they are.
Yeah, that is a problem.
So you don't really get that thrill of, oh my god, look what I just got. Because you don't even know what you got until like the end of the level. And even then, it just kind of lists it.
Well,
so the presentation is not that great as far as the collection.
Well, you know, there's a similar problem if you pause the game and you're on the classic controller. There's this arcane series of buttons you have to press to exit. It's
L, R, A, N, plus.
Weird.
Yeah, but you can't read
A. It was like that in Melee as well, though.
No, but the problem is, unless you have a big TV, all you can see for the A button is a circle, and then there's some sort of black like hieroglyph in the middle of it.
Okay. I have an HD, so
yeah, well,
I don't have that problem.
He's not in HD, remember?
I can't
But he just blows it up big enough he can see it, I guess.
Technically, Wii is in HD. 480p is technically...
Well, isn't that called enhanced definition?
It is enhanced D, actually.
Well, yeah. That's a bullshit term.
Yeah, well,
it's non-standard definition.
Yeah, it's just that Nintendo actually put that on their boxes and stuff during the GameCube era. That's what it was known as.
Oh, EDTV.
Yeah, that's how it was referred when they said that it was progressive scan.
They also used to put megabits on the boxes of N64.
Yes.
It doesn't mean it's a real word.
Well, you know, still, it just didn't make any sense that they had such a small icon up there for X. I mean, the entire screen is covered in these, like, button combos that do things when you pause the game. So why is this...
just think of it as a secret code.
So
James.
Why is exit like this tiny little dot on the screen by comparison?
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I guess so far with Brawl, I haven't been blown away by it, but I've mainly been playing it by myself. And... I tried to play it online. I actually played some random matches yesterday morning, just a few hours after I got the game. And it took me a couple of tries before I found anybody, but once I did, I really liked the way it was handled because I found one other person to play against, and then we had two computers, okay? So we played a couple times, and then as we were selecting characters and stages in between matches, another person joined our group.
Right.
And then so we only had one CPU at that point. And we played for a few more minutes, and then another person played. So we built up from two up to four people just automatically by keep on playing with each other.
Are you sure?
And the four-player with humans are definitely the best matches. And so if you can get any kind of game going with random matching, I would say just stick with the group as long as you can, and it'll build up and it'll get better
now,
and better.
That's good.
And I had a really fun time with it. There was no lag, and... it was really good.
I smell witchcraft again. Nintendo's, yes, this is a real person you're playing against.
No, well, if it was CPU, it would say so. That's
now,
it
yeah,
does
when,
actually.
When a human joins
it,
in,
it
how,
does
do,
actually
yeah,
say
how does,
so,
it, how does it? It note that? How does it say?
Well, it no longer says CPU.
Does it get like a, then their username comes up over the head, or have the name tag?
Okay.
You don't see their username.
Oh, no, of course not, because it's random, isn't it? You can't
right,
possibly
it's
see.
But you can tell that it's not a CPU. There's some indication.
So they just
it.
Take away the CPU, and then you could just tell from the behavior.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You can tell.
So it's...
No, it says, literally, it no longer says CPU.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
It tells you that it is a human. That's my point. Sorry, I'm not being very clear.
Oh, no, I was actually just accusing Nintendo of lying about their online strategy. You know, we've been doing that for the past few months now. I mean, might as well continue.
Yeah, well, see, that's what I have... That's the good stuff I have to say about the online. But
here comes the bad.
The other part of the with anyone stuff is that I'm one of the people who's been cursed with the missing Wi-Fi options.
Yes. Yeah, no.
So this is a really bizarre thing, and hopefully by the time this podcast goes out, it won't be an issue anymore, because I'm hoping it's something that Nintendo is just going to resolve, or else it's caused by server load, and once things lighten up a little bit, it'll just automatically pop up there.
Well, it's interesting, over on Nintendo's tech support forums, like, that someone has come along and said that basically something to do with, like, they're essentially rolling it out, and everybody should have had those options appear, like, if they've had their Wii connected, the first time they connected their Wii to the internet through Smash Brothers was, like, 24 hours ago. But mm-hmm. quite a few people have reported not having, you know, the spectator mode available or whatever else.
It's been about 36 hours.
It's been 40
right now
hours now or whatever, so that I don't know whether they've just understated the length of time it's going to take, or whether they're not being quite totally forthright about what is going on.
I think they're being sly bastards about this, and I think their representation of what is going on with this feature is not correct. Because if they were rolling this out gradually, then it doesn't make sense that you could get it 100% of the time by deleting your save file and starting.
Yeah, what's that about? That's
well, it's
very
Nintendo.
Obvious.
I mean, really,
well,
what
I don't
are we
know
expecting?
Why that works, but it works, and it tells me that the problem is not what they're saying.
Intuitively, I'd have to agree. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Anyway, I'm not deleting my save file. There's no fucking way.
Sure. Why should you?
Well, have you tried maybe just transferring it over to an SD card, then deleting it, and then transferring it back?
See, I don't. I haven't tried this, but I really doubt you can transfer your save file to the SD card.
Why not?
Because with all other Wii games that have online features, you cannot.
I don't
really.
You can't save
That's
your
retarded.
Guitar Hero 3 save data. Yeah, it is retarded. Yeah, I mean, and I don't know why that is, but any game that has like Wi-Fi connection or Wii Connect 24 support, you cannot transfer that from the system to the SD card.
Gentlemen, I would like to propose a new theory. Nintendo's online strategy was created by the help of a Magic 8 Ball.
Yeah. Well, by the way, if you want to know even more proof that Nintendo hates us, especially in America, there were two games, you know, the Masterpieces thing where you can like play Virtual Console stuff
yes.
within Brawl?
Yeah.
There are two games in the Japanese version, Fire Emblem and Earthbound.
Oh.
That are not in the
But why did they have to take out Earthbound? Because that was in America.
Yeah,
because
it's not like they had to translate it.
Well, you know,
yeah, that was the one that was actually in America, so what's the problem? I don't understand.
It's
I never understood why
Fire
they included those two anyway, because, I mean, how much could you really do in those games in the allotted time the demo has?
Well, but you could say the same for Super Metroid.
Yeah.
But you
can still get a feel for the gameplay in Super Metroid. You could actually go the entire allotted time and not do anything in Fire Emblem.
Well, that may be the case.
Well, it's still in
know.
The Japanese
I mean,
version, isn't it? Obviously,
they should make
some
the time. They should make the time limit longer. You know, give you 10 minutes with Earthbound. That's enough time to walk around, get in some battles.
I still find that very.
Check it out.
That's very curious indeed. I mean, Fire Emblem Fight. There would be translation, but that's the one that was translated. So, well, I don't get that at all.
Well, is Earthbound out on the Virtual Console in Japan?
Oh.
No, I don't think it is.
There goes that
I don't know, I've kind of lost track of. There's a lot of stuff on the Japanese Virtual Console that I've just perused the list every now and again that I'm kind of surprised it's on there. Like, I didn't know that, but I don't think that's one of them.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. And actually, I know Kohler has remarked, Chris Kohler, who was on the show last week, has remarked a couple of times that lately, in the past few months, the Japanese Virtual Console releases have been kind of crappy, and the American system is actually getting better.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not getting better. I mean, the Virtual Console releases were probably better a year ago than they are now, but he's saying that the state of American Virtual Console is actually better than the Japanese.
If something like Earthbound was released in Japan, I mean, people would go nuts over it. You would definitely hear something about it.
Sure.
I think
especially
because they would start to scream for an American.
Exactly.
Release,
just
they,
for the
outrage. They scream anyway, but it would be. It would be unmistakable.
Like, Nintendo pays attention to the American Earthbound fans anyway. I think there's just like an office in Nintendo somewhere where they laugh at the American Earthbound fan sites.
Yep.
It's just like their daily stress relief. Let's go see what they're doing over at the Earthbound sites.
They're like Dennis Kucinich supporters. Like, you see them everywhere, but
there's only like six of them.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. They're extremely vocal, but they're not really. Anyway. That's mean of me to say that. but
I had a theory that maybe the only games on there are ones available for the virtual console, but I don't know. Are there any others on there?
The Japanese definitely do have the first Fire Emblem. They got a lot of Fire Emblems on the virtual console.
They've got like seven.
Yeah.
Well,
is it possible that maybe Nintendo plans to release that compilation that's been rumored for a while now?
I suppose it's not important. Well, there was rumors about a sort of DS, like, because they weren't going to release Mother 3 on the GBA, that they might release some sort of DS compilation of the Mother/Earthbound games altogether on the DS card.
Yeah, that really sounds like Nintendo to translate two
games. No.
Sell them for the price of one.
Earthbound Zero is already translated. It was ready to go when the NES died.
See, the thing is, I don't think Nintendo has access to that translation anymore.
What, do you think they just lost it? Lost the mold?
Yeah, that and the mold out of the window.
Yeah, if they can't make Wavebirds anymore, they actually kept the translation.
Yeah, forget it.
The thing is that translated copy was eventually sold on the black market, and so Nintendo no longer owns it. And unless that translation is sitting in a text file on someone's old Apple IIc, then...
I bet Nintendo could track it down if they wanted to.
They might want to anyway. Because Earthbound is very much a modern style RPG. Like the story and the character dialogue is all very modern, and they probably would want to make it.
All they would have to do really is find the dump of the ROM, and they could just rip the text out then and just confirm that it is the original text. I mean, it's not like.
Wait. How would you confirm that? They don't have the original text.
Because they have to have somebody there that...
So somebody could slip a penis joke in there, which they probably have in the hack translation. And if Nintendo doesn't go through it
they're going to
confirm every single thing, it's probably easier to just translate it.
To just do it again, and you get the benefits of having a new one, but they're presumably not going to do that.
I'm sure they've done market analysis on this many times over the years. I'm sure they go back every few years and say, is it now a good idea to translate?
Well, also, what do they do to the also the fact, too, that they probably now translate games better than they did back then.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, much better. But that means it costs them.
But then the question is, are they going to want to retranslate the original Earthbound? Because its translation certainly has some weird stuff going on in it, too.
It could be done again. Yeah, I mean, I would love for them to go through and do all three of them, but it's just not necessarily a good business decision.
Because the only person going to buy it's named Steve. He's the world's Earthbound fan for North America.
He's the North American representative for the Earthbound fans. Yeah.
He votes for Lyndon LaRouche.
He is president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer of the American Earthbound fan club.
Yep.
Anyway, ladies, he's single. To get back to Brawl, I actually, after many hours of adding friend codes and junk like that, I finally got a friend code match up today with Evan and a user from our site, MysticalAZN. And I don't know where the latter is located, but Evan's in Seattle. It's about 1,000 miles away from me. And we played for about 45 minutes. We probably played 10 matches at least, maybe a dozen. And there was only lag in one or two of those. I mean, most of them were very smooth. I really couldn't tell the difference between local and online. So I'm very impressed with that so far. And we had an awesome time. I mean, that's finally, after 2 days of owning the game and playing it for like 7 or 8 hours, finally I started to feel like, oh shit, this is great. Like, this is what I remember Smash Brothers being like. You know?
But I'm curious.
So, and the taunts, by the way, are great. In Melee, I was never a taunter, but because you can attach these little quotes to them in the online with your friends, I'm starting to taunt a lot now. And it's making me really think, like, what is the best joke or the meanest, funniest thing I can put into, like, 10 characters?
Real man, actually.
So I'm probably going to be revising
those. So in this one,
add your own taunt, right? That's awesome. That's good.
Ooh.
Yeah, four different ones. Up, down, left,
yeah, that's the great thing, because it is a different animation, and you get a different text thing to go with it as well.
Right. It's very tempting to just to use those to like almost communicate or just to say things a lot, but you have to remember, you still get the full-length taunt animation,
which makes you very vulnerable
for about 5 seconds.
So, well, I'm curious.
You know, I'm sitting there making Zelda say "pwned," and then I get a big kick to the face because I can't get her out of the animation.
Rough justice.
You just have to be careful.
Considering actually just like out of protest when I play with Yoshi, just making the text message just say Yoshi. because that's all he could say. just at a protest, A, that Nintendo characters are getting increasingly preoccupied with their own names to the level of Pokemon when they really shouldn't be, and then the second thing is just that obviously we don't have voice chat, so that was going to be my Tiananmen Square moment there.
Well, we have Skype.
Totally comparable.
Wow. Fight the system, Greg. Fight the system.
Well, you know, question I have is,
it's just like Tiananmen.
Can you use those little messages when you're playing random matches?
No,
of course not. Nothing
in random. You don't get a name over your head. You don't get taunt messages or anything. It's truly anonymous.
No,
you
could taunt, take out the taunt,
but it's still fun actually. It's still fun. So if you don't have the Wii friend, if you don't have any friends online, you should do it. It's still good. Actually, as of today, I've heard that the with anyone matches, the random matches are actually down because there's so much lag and load on the server that Nintendo shut them down, and they're like fiddling with some switches and stuff, and they're gonna put it back up at some point. Hopefully, you know, not very long.
Oh, okay, wow. Switches. Everything will be great.
Yeah,
you know, Nintendo. Our online strategy:
restart the servers.
Switches.
That's right. Throw a towel over them.
You know, I
good, guys.
Think,
I flipped it down.
I always think when they roll out a huge game like this, like what it must be like to run those servers, because it must just be like waiting for a bomb to go off. You know, like that first day, you're just like, okay,
we
put up these servers. Let's hope they hold up. And then you watch everything go down, and everybody start bitching on every single forum everywhere.
And this is bound to happen. This is foretold because Nintendo doesn't do betas. They don't do load tests.
They don't really
do
online.
They really, there's no way for them to know. And they always seem astonished by the amount of activity there is online for their new games. What do you expect?
Yeah. You know, you would have thought, especially with the delays.
Hey, well, yeah. I have a question. People have accused the Wii of being released in small quantities to keep the hype up. Maybe they're releasing crappy servers to keep the hype up for their online play. See, our online play doesn't suck. Everybody wants to be on it.
Yeah. We can't even.
And you know what?
We're so overloaded.
I could almost see them doing that. That just seems like something they'd do.
Are you accusing Nintendo of artificially generating hype? You bastard.
No.
Okay. Well, do you guys have anything else you want to say or ask about Brawl before we move on to other games?
One thing.
My copy coming.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll have much more next week, especially if the freeloader turns out to work.
Well, I do have one thing. We were talking about the control modifications earlier. I was really disappointed that on the classic controller, I don't believe you can map the D-pad to movement.
I think you're right.
And that seems really stupid because I kept reaching to the D-pad
for that.
Move,
I mean,
because
obviously you wouldn't necessarily want to do it on the GameCube pad, but like obviously hypothetically you could map movement to the GameCube D-pad, and if you could do that then I've got one of those retro zone things, so I plug my Super NES pad into the Wii. And, you know, that would have been kind of fun. And Stephen Totillo over at the MTV blog sort of wanted to do that. He wanted to be able to sort of plug in his NES pad or something through one of those RetroZone ports and then play Smash Brothers with an NES pad. But because you can't map the D-pad on the Classic or the GameCube to that, they didn't put that in, then it doesn't work.
Well, you know, Smash Brothers does require more buttons than are on the NES controller.
My turbo NES controller.
I don't know why he was holding it. I mean, the SNES pad, you could do it because it's pretty much a classic controller, apart from a few extra shoulder buttons.
But, I want to map the power glove to play Smash Brothers with.
the only way.
I would never get laid again.
The U-Force.
Yeah. You film that and put that on YouTube for sure. And you would really have to have like some footage of Fred Savage on there too. That would just absolutely kill it.
I love
it. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
I can't believe I'm getting paid for this movie. It's so bad.
That's Fred. All right. So let's move on from Brawl. We'll be discussing it for weeks and weeks to come. I don't want to overkill it this first time, but let's do real new business, and I figured since poor Greg doesn't have Smash Brothers, we'll start with that.
Yeah, okay, well, not so much new business, unfinished business on my end with what's going on.
Lords of Thunder?
Right, well, the first thing is 2 weeks ago I mentioned something that Shane Bettenhausen brought up on the One Up Yours podcast, where he intimated that Brawl wasn't going to come into Europe till the fall, as he put it. Well, with typical podcast luck with when we're dealing with Smash release dates, immediately after the recording, he posted something on his blog where basically he said, that I don't know where I was getting that from, and to ignore it completely and disregard it. After, obviously, several...
In other words, Nintendo called him and was pissed off.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is...
That was a private conversation, and you weren't supposed to say that.
Yes, that was quite interesting. It's quite interesting. The quote here is, judge for yourselves whether he's got a gun to his head while he's saying this, or typing it, I should say. While recounting some of the info that I learned from Nintendo of America's president and COO, Reginald Fils-Aimé, I implied that the European release of Smash Bros. Melee, he says, for a start. So that was some sort of plausible deniability that had been moved.
That's Freudian.
Had been moved to the fall of 2008. That's not quite accurate. First of all, when you try to do a denial, don't put "not quite accurate." It's not that strong. And then he goes on to say, as neither NOE nor Reggie has announced any official release. Well, obviously, I know they haven't announced anything. That's the point.
That's why people got excited when you said it, dude.
Yeah,
there is no announcement.
If he had announced it, he wouldn't be speculating.
Exactly. So that's exactly. That's a redundant point to make. And this is, Reggie did tell me that the release had been pushed out of the winter-spring time frame due to the amount of localization required to get the game running in all European languages. But this is the strongest bit of denial in it. He says, Reggie did not say when Europeans will get Smash Brothers. That's the most categorical thing that suggests maybe it wasn't just he said something he shouldn't have said. But I don't know. We're kind of back where we were, really.
You know, maybe Reggie didn't say it, but maybe he was having this conversation and his hand was sort of wafting through the air like a leaf.
No, he was just pointing to a calendar. He didn't say anything, but he was pointing to a specific day.
He made kind of a pumpkin face.
He used flashcards.
I don't know how to make a pumpkin face.
Flashcards said
autumn.
He just pulled out a jack-o'-lantern with "screw you, Europe" carved in it. we're back where we were, and this is, I'm not going to be quite sufficiently churlish to complain about this for every week until Brawl actually comes out, but I am going to be churlish enough to complain for every week that it's out in America and we don't even have a date yet. So this is week one.
Yeah.
This is week one of Brawl Bitch.
Listeners?
And Greg is not eating until this injustice is resolved.
I've got quite a lot stored up, but I can't last out that long, I'll guarantee you that.
Well,
I wanted to clarify that for our listeners, obviously, if they've taken on Shane Fever from me. We still basically have no idea when it's coming out yet. I mean, the strongest rumours have been June, which is probably the earliest we could possibly expect it, considering they're going to divert the units to America in May with Wii Fit and Mario Kart having probably just come out at the tail end of April. So it won't be June at the earliest. I think we can all agree on that. But other than that, we know nothing.
Can I make 2 points here?
Oh, yeah, sure.
First off, I do know that the rumor they were going to divert Wii units to the United States in like heavy doses for Brawl is in fact true, because I know that the Best Buy that one of my friends got Brawl at, the clerk there said they got way more Wiis that week than they had in any week for the last few months.
Sure, yeah.
So they probably
no, and
are
the, and,
gonna...
and the way it's pro sure the way it's probably going to pan out now is March is going to be heavily to the US, then April with the two big games in Europe, and then shifting back to the US with Wii Fit and Mario Kart coming out there as well, and then hopefully maybe June will be when
maybe.
We come back to Europe, but don't bank on it. That's all I'll say about that.
Well, Greg, I was hoping to get away from the
yeah. Well,
discussion.
I did.
I mean,
that was I felt important. But the other unfinished business I've been dealing with this week. First of all, ActRaiser. I have my copy, and when I said new condition, I meant it's pristine. It's absolutely perfect. The plastic bag that they have in the carts, you know, in the old days, is without a single wrinkle. It's really a thing of beauty to see.
That's actually my copy on Virtual Console is also without a fingerprint.
It's perfect. It's amazing.
Well, it's kind of nice to see the state a lot of my Super Famicom boxes are in. It's lovely to see a Super Famicom box from 1990 look like it just came off the assembly line. It's very nice. But I've been playing the game itself, obviously, and just gradually a little bit here, a little bit there, because that's one of the nice things, even though it's sort of in many ways like an old school arcadey kind of game, because of the structure of the game, you can save it and all that, you can play it in little bits, which is not something you could do with, you know, a lot of those games of that type, like a Ghouls and Ghosts or something like that. And I hesitate to say high concept, but it's, yeah, relative to its contemporaries.
It is.
Yeah, relative to its contemporaries, it's very much like that. You know, everything's kind of got a sort of...
Relative to games now.
Yeah,
yeah, well, yeah, especially kind of, you know, a lot of the games on the Wii.
Compared to, like, God of War.
Well, there's more genre mixing now. Yeah. Back then, genre mixing was really, you know, out there.
Yeah, indeed.
There's a lot more games that try multiple things now than there were then.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I mean, not to rag on God of War, because I own both of them, and I like them. I don't have the PSP one, I don't own a PSP, but it's actually very similar in concept, in the fundamental concept to ActRaiser. You're basically this god on Earth, and you have to kill demons and, you know, take revenge or whatever. And look at, even putting aside the simulation parts of ActRaiser, the action stages are higher concept than God of War. God of War
an entirely different kind
is run
of game,
around
Johnny.
And kill shit.
Yeah, I mean, they're entirely different kinds of games.
And there's really nothing else to it, you know? It's combos and button taps and you know...
Send your hate mail to.
I mean...
Well, yeah, I mean, I like God of War, but I'm just saying, I think ActRaiser is still a good concept.
Oh, it definitely stands up as a game. I mean, I'm quite fortunate, A, that my Super Famicom still works, and B, that because we were importing it back in the day, we had it converted to RGB SCART, which means that the output of the picture, even on a HD TV 32-inch size LCD, does not look terrible. Because if you run through something composite on a LCD, it looks terrible. It looks really bad. But because it was converted to output in RGB, it looks, you know, it's not component level, but it's perfectly acceptable. So, I mean, and obviously I don't have any of the PAL problems. So it's a really nice presentation of the game. And other than having to muddle through the sort of text issues with the occasional glance at a FAQ for the simulation stuff, I've mostly been able to sort of, you know, fumble my way through that without too much problems. And I mean, some of the later stages are graphically, it seems to, because early on, I mean, it's very nice, and I'm sure in 1990 it would literally have separated my head from its shoulders how brilliant it looked. But I mean, some of the early stages are fairly simple, you know, not a lot of parallax work or anything like that, just sort of pretty solid. But particularly the volcano level, there's some wonderful parallax work with sort of different sort of strata of sort of clouds billowing around you, and the colour palette's wonderful, and really, really impressive work. And I mean, the gameplay itself during the action bits is fairly sort of standard compared to something like Castlevania 4, which mucked around with multi-directional whipping and all the rest of it. But it's solid.
I think it's simple, but it's difficult enough that you have to really think about.
Oh yeah, you cannot just I mean, there's
like
no
that.
Way.
It's quite challenging.
There's no way that you can just sort of bumble around, you know, just button mash or anything like that. I mean, I completed one of the marsh levels today, and you've got like this guy that's got a spear, and he keeps, you know, he's got real.
Yeah, those are
really
things.
Yeah, those guys. You have to. It's almost, it's very sort of cat and mouse. You know, you have to just get one blow in, and then sort of, you know, jump around for a while, avoiding his thrusts, and then get another one in, and all. It's kind of, it's almost like something like a bit like if you were fighting a Stealthos in a Zelda game, an Ocarina or something. You know,
it's much worse than that.
Yeah, if it were hard, because obviously the thing in a Zelda game is you can stand there and let it chop your head off five times, you're not going to die, because it doesn't hurt you enough to do that. That's the difference. If you played Zelda, like, it would actually kill you if it made contact, let's put it that way. So it's a very fine game, and I've enjoyed that a great deal. And another old business thing I've got, perhaps the definitive old business item that I got to in the last fortnight, is Super Paper Mario. So I won't dwell on it, because it is, I think it's the reason why this segment is called New Business, was to get people to shut up about it. So it is literally antithetical for me to be talking about this in this segment. However, I would like to say I did play through all of it in a fairly brief period of time, because I was renting the game. So that's probably not the best way to enjoy it, given the slow pace. You know, sort of a lot of slow pace in a dense period of time was probably not ideal. But it's just a charming game. I mean, I've really found it amusing, where there's that moment where one of the bosses has to, like, load, and you see the Wii channel thing spinning in his eye as he sort of loads information. Considering how much we've been ragging on the Wii Shop channel lately, that just really exaggerated how funny I found that. And the rest of the game is, I don't know, I think if I'd got that in April, you know, if he'd been able to get it in April of last year, I probably would have been a wee bit disappointed. But as it turns out, it was solid, but nothing that overwhelming. As a rental, it's great, you know.
I think that's a pretty big caveat.
Yeah, it didn't really grab me. I mean, I played it for a little while. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of cool. But the thing is, I feel like once you get through the first couple of areas, you're kind of like, all right, I get the point, you know? I just didn't feel like there was a whole lot from, like, going further into the game, like, beyond the whole kind of, like, you know, kitsch factor. I was like, all right.
There was, yeah. You know. And there were a few segments which I just thought were bad, which is a rare thing to say about.
The space section,
I thought, was appalling at times. It was just so plodding. I mean, you go through so much text in that game, it is by default plodding. So, but when you're actually therefore in gameplay, and you would hope that it takes on a bit more of an intense quality, but it's so aimless, that part of it. I was just like, good lord, this is actually trying for me to endure.
Yeah, there's a section in that space level where, I guess I can spoil the game, it doesn't matter. You're looking for a piece of toilet paper, and it takes like 20 minutes of walking back and forth in this short level to find it. And it is so utterly tedious.
Absolutely.
I'm just like, I'm just gonna kick the door in. I don't care.
I think there's no question that the best part of the game is the one that looks like an old Super Mario Brothers game.
Yeah, pretty much.
Was that like the third
one? I think so, yeah.
Pixel Land.
It not only does it look the coolest and it's nostalgic looking, but the actual level design and the gameplay design is the most fun in that level. There's more action and less talky and less look for this MacGuffin and take it here, you know.
No. That still happens pretty heavily in that level. And in fact,
really?
I think it's just by comparison.
Maybe I'm just
it's just better. Every minute in that castle is a fetch quest.
Okay.
And
maybe I'm not.
And also,
it
isn't
well
that castle the part where you have the runner on the mouse wheel?
No, that's before that.
No, I thought that was
that's
a different
before
chapter.
That. That's
oh,
the
okay.
chap.
Yeah.
That's the chapter
like
two.
Earning your money to get out of
the
slave camp. That was
yeah. That's bad. Again. I mean, it kind of reminds me of what someone Edge said about No More Heroes, where it's like, oh, it dares to bore you, and I'm like, well, as daring as that may be, I'm still fucking bored. You
know. It dares to do what no other game would do.
Make you not want to play.
You got to give it that. It is fucking there, isn't it? Jesus.
You just explained all the love of Wes Anderson.
Oh, you're not going to turn into Evan, are you?
Okay, let's move on. And okay, I'll go next. I've got totally different stuff for new business, and I'll try to go through this fairly quickly, but I never do. Geometry Wars Galaxies, I'm not going to talk about it a lot because we always do, but I just want to say Wendy did finally mail me his copy of the DS game.
Yay.
So I finally got to unlock the last galaxy. It's not much different from the other ones, but it was cool. And I think more interesting was I had a couple of days where I played his DS game just to kind of get a better feel for what the DS game is like, and it's actually exactly what I thought it was from the download version.
Right.
It's the whole thing plays at about 10 frames per second, I'm guessing. I'm going to throw out a bullshit, like, Matt Casamassina projection on the frame rate there. Hmm. But it's really slow. I mean, it's really slow. And it makes the game easier because you can just see things coming. And also, the scale of the game is weird because either the enemies are bigger or your ship is smaller, but it just doesn't seem to fit the screen very well. And the touchscreen shooting, I actually found it to work extremely well. I had no problems. I really didn't have to think about it. But moving around with the D-pad does not feel good.
Yeah.
It really doesn't. And it also has that Metroid Prime Hunters issue of you're holding the DS and using the D-pad at the same time all with one hand. And then you're pushing down on the screen with the other hand. And it just hurts your wrists after a little while. So it's not good for like extended play sessions. But I don't think that's as much of a problem in Geometry Wars because it's kind of a morsel-sized game. So anyway, I'm still not impressed by the DS version. And if you're still waiting to get this and you've been thinking about it because of all the praise it gets on this show, get the Wii version. Oh my God, get the Wii version, please. It's only like $30 or $40. That's definitely the
one. How much is the DS version? How much is the DS version?
I think it's $30. So the Wii version maybe like $10 more. It's
yeah, I should
better.
Say in Europe. Can I just say right in now? Europe, commonly they're actually priced identically. They definitely go with the Wii version.
That makes it even easier.
Can I just say something right now? Johnny just ragged on how the game feels in your hands when you're playing it on the DS.
Yeah.
Guess what got runner-up for best use of DS features this year?
Yeah, that's because Wendy pushed that through. And I mean, in terms of, it does have good use of the DS features in terms of like online leaderboards, game sharing, connection with the Wii. Yeah. The touchscreen control is great. I can't fault it for any of that. I mean, it's impressive what they did. As a package, it's very nice. I just don't like the ergonomics of it.
No.
And the same thing went with Hunters. You know, it's a very impressive game. Technically, it has a lot going for it. The online was amazing. But it hurts my hands to play.
Now, if you ever have to, it's hard to get over if you ever have to hook your finger around on the shoulder button, that's where the problem starts, isn't it? I mean, I find much worse because if you're trying to hold the sort of, you obviously, because you're using the start, you're kind of holding the system with one hand, but if you have to hold the system with one hand while hooking one finger right to press the shoulder button, that just kills.
Yeah, now you're holding the whole system on like two
that
fingers.
Just kills
right.
me. It really does, especially because I have long fingers and I have to really hook my finger in that case, sort of short, and it's terrible. Because that was one thing I loved about Star Fox Command is because you only had to press like the D-pad or anything you liked, so you didn't have to use the shoulder button to fire, so therefore it wasn't nearly
well, you know,
as uncomfortable.
One thing that it makes that extra obnoxious is that neither version of the DS has a really nice feeling D-pad.
Yeah.
The D-pad on the old DS doesn't give much when you press on it, and the D-pad on the new DS isn't as big, and it's much more, I don't know what's the best way of putting it, sharp edges.
I like the one on the light.
I like it better, no doubt about that.
But yeah, I like it better. I like it quite a bit. I know a lot of people really, really like the D-pad on the Game Boy Micro.
Yes, it's excellent.
Well, it's got to have something good. To like about that piece of crap.
Oh, you see,
I don't have a
ragging
micro,
on the micro, so. Honestly. Oh.
Yeah,
it deserves all right, it.
So moving on. I played a good bit of Layton. Not much to say there, except the voice acting kills me, and I keep reading in reviews where people are praising the voice acting. No, it's so bad, especially the little boy.
Yeah, the little
Luke.
Boys.
It's like Layton's apprentice has done it again. It's oh my God, dude. I have to turn that down,
no more
which
of
is
that.
Convenient because I usually play it while I'm watching TV, and so and again the nice factor there is there's no time limit on any of the puzzles, so like you can just kind of like look back at it every 30 seconds and then look up and think about it while you watch American Idol or whatever. It's pretty convenient that way. One thing I haven't been playing is Guitar Hero 3. My disc has been out for about 2 weeks right now, getting replaced.
Is this going to turn into another countdown along with Greg's week since I haven't gotten a release date?
Dude.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good thing that I play the snot out of it and I don't really feel the need to play Guitar Hero every day because this is ridiculous. 2 weeks, You know, I know it couldn't have taken more than 3 days for them to get it. It couldn't take more than 3 days for it to get back to me. So what the fuck are they doing in the meantime?
The thing is, though, like, they were offering...
Processing?
They ended up offering...
There's a
they
box
ended up offering,
with the good discs, and all they have to do is put it in
there. They ended up offering refunds, right, as a sort of alternative as well, didn't they? Didn't they offer refunds as well as replacements at some point?
I don't think they did, actually.
No, I think they did, actually.
Really?
But it came after the first wave.
It's just like, it probably would have ended up being quicker if you sort of didn't return it the first time, waited till the refunds, then returned that, then bought a store copy that's corrected. It probably would have been quicker.
Yeah, if I just got the refund and went and bought a new copy that's fixed, that probably
would
have been almost
seems like
how can you let that happen?
They're probably just, you know, waiting to send everything out in one big batch. I bet that's what they do. Like, they mail them out probably maybe once a month or something like that. Because I know when I just to give you an idea of, you know, how quickly somebody can do that if they really want to. When I got Halo 3, my disc was of course scratched up, and when I sent that in,
like everyone,
Microsoft sent it back to me like within 4 days. I mean, by the time
and this is Microsoft, the company, not
exactly, because what I did is I sent it out overnight, and so I know it got to them the next day, and it was back. I sent it out on a Monday, and I got it back like I think on like the Friday or something. Like, it came back really, really quickly. So if they want to send it out, they can.
Well, you know, we could say that Microsoft's customer service, at least in their Xbox division, has gotten better with all the problems they've had with the 360.
Yeah, it had to, because people were becoming enraged.
Yeah, so they do have some experience here. Whereas Activision doesn't...
I'm not impressed with Activision.
Activision doesn't even have the experience to tell stereo from mono.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on, I actually away from the Nintendo stuff, I decided in this 2 week gap since the last new business, I decided I wanted to catch up on some PC gaming, especially before Brawl came out and destroyed my life, which it hasn't done so far, but it could. It's ramping up for sure. So I got back into some PC gaming. I haven't finished BioShock, but I did finally make some progress on it. I played it for a couple hours and met Andrew Ryan and got through that point. So, like, finally the story that everybody talks about, I'm
Don't
finally getting
for
some
me.
Of it. I had to play for, like, 12 hours. I'm not spoiling it. But I'm just saying,
it
kind of kills me that people always talk about the story in BioShock. Let me tell you, dude, for, like, the first 12 hours, there is no story, okay? You're in this incredible environment, and it's very interesting, you know, the setting that you're in. But as far as plot, zilch.
Yeah,
there is
no plot,
okay? You're going, and you're trying to meet this man, and that is the story. And then there's like 10 minutes of actual story, like, oh, this is interesting. There's some cool stuff happening. And then it kind of throws you back in the same scenario.
See, it
kind of
lost
before.
Me. I'm at the point where I think I've gone into the fishery, and I think I just got the camera. That's where I'm at right now. And
yeah, dude, you're pretty early. You've got another like at least 5 hours.
I mean, I gotta say, it's kind of lost me because I feel like I'm kind of just wandering aimlessly. You know?
Yeah, it lost me for a while too, honestly. I'm not very impressed at the way that it motivates you to keep playing, because the actual gameplay is very repetitive as far as like killing. Basically, you're killing the same 3 or 4 enemies over and over again, hour after hour. There's very little variety in the enemies, and eventually they get harder, but what that means is they take more shots to kill, and they do more damage to you. They don't get smarter, they don't behave differently. And you don't really get any new enemies. And I don't want to hate on BioShock, because there are things I like about it a lot, but I think the game is probably too long for its own good, and I think it's too padded out with just repetitive killing. And I think if they played it up more as an adventure game and less as a shooter, it probably would have been a better game, because the shooting's not that good. So anyway, there's BioShock. I'm still playing it. Hopefully I'm going to finish that at some point. I wanted to get on Steam and at least try episode 1 or 2 of Half-Life 2, because I've owned those since like October and I haven't even booted them up at all. You know, I did play through the original Half-Life 2 and I didn't love it, but I thought it was good. And so I would like to play episode 1 and 2 at some point, but I just haven't gotten around to it. And I wanted to try Team Fortress 2, which I haven't tried that since I got my new graphics card, which I think would solve a lot of the really, really slowness of it, which made it unplayable online. So that's still on the to-do list. But I did try the demo of Audio Surf, which is a game I'd heard about a lot on GAF and some other stuff. And it's a Steam game. It costs like $10, but there's a free demo of it you can get through Steam. And so I got the demo of it. And, and the idea is that it's sort of like a mix between Guitar Hero and F-Zero. And the big draw is that you can play it with any song on your computer. Almost any song. It'll do like MP3s and M4As. So it'll pretty much cover anything. And so it boots it up and it creates this sort of racetrack based on the tempo of the song, and then the notes that come in are based on the beat and the rhythm and the different instruments. And it's sort of like a puzzle game in that you're trying to collect these blocks and create chains of the same color without interrupting with another color. I played all the way through the demo. It's like five songs you can do, and you can pick them off your computer, and that part I liked, but it's just not that much fun. It's just really not. I'm not impressed by it. I don't really get all the love for it. I certainly wouldn't pay $10 for it.
I know you don't have a PSP, Johnny, but Beats on the PSP is similar. You can use your own MP3s, and it's a button matching.
Is that the Harmonix thing? I know they did one.
No, it's not that. This is actually by, I think, the Sony London studio did it. Yeah, and I mean it's a very simple game, but it's kind of cool because you can use your own MP3s, and what it does is it kind of reads the it reads your MP3 and makes like a button matching template. So you know, like you have
it's like
exactly you have like X's and stuff coming in.
I think like Winamp visualizations, it seems cool for like the first couple times you do it, and then you realize it's lame and it's not really worth your time. I was getting a lot more enjoyment out of just listening to songs on my computer that I hadn't listened to in a while than I was playing the game. And that told me that it wasn't really a good idea, you know, not worth $10 for me. I played a game called N, which was just released in an updated version on Xbox Live Arcade. I haven't played the Xbox version, but I heard about it. I thought, well, that sounds interesting. So I found it. It's a free game on the computer, on the internet. So I found that, and I was playing that, and... It's like a platformer where you play this really tiny little black ninja, and he animates beautifully. The animation is really cool, but he doesn't have any attacks or anything. It's just you're literally running and jumping, and you basically collect a couple things, hit a switch, and go through the door. And so it's all about level design, and it's kind of neat. I like the way it looks, but the controls I couldn't get into. Maybe it's better with like a controller, but the jumping is super floaty, and I just didn't care for it much. But it was free, so I don't know. The other free game I played, and this is my last one, and this is amazing. Okay, it's called Desktop Tower Defense. Yeah. And I heard Steven Totillo and N'Guy Kroll talking about this on 1UP Yours, and I figured since I was doing my PC gaming binge, I had to try this out. It's literally a browser game. It runs inside your browser. And it's one of the greatest games I've played in a long time. It is amazing. It's this totally hardcore real-time strategy game. And the idea is really simple. You have these little dudes, and they're crossing from one side of the screen to the other, and you have these towers that you put up. And the towers automatically shoot at the guys as they walk past it. So it's pure strategy. You have a certain amount of money. You get more money as you kill the little creepy guys. And you use your money to build different types of towers. And you try to put the towers in a pattern that will force the guys to walk a longer path so you have more time to kill them. And you try to choose your towers in a good combination so that they're able to kill the enemies before they get all the way across. And it's so simple, and yet there's so many things you can do with it. There's so many ways to do it. And I was playing it on the easy level, and I thought, this is almost too simple. This is really too easy. And so I cranked it up to medium, and it totally kicked my ass. I mean, medium is so much more complicated and so much more difficult that it completely changes the way you think about it, and you have to get really aggressive with the way you play the game. And I still haven't been able to do very well on medium. Even easy is challenging to me. I'm not very good at strategy games, apparently. But check this out. This is an amazing game. You can kill hours and hours, and it's not like dumb, brainless Peggle shit, and I love Peggle, but it is totally brainless. This is gaming, okay? It is great, and it's totally free, and you can play it on probably any computer built in the last 10 years. If you go to handdrawngames.com, it'll pop right up. And I highly, highly recommend this. It's awesome. And just don't expect to get
to work. Yeah, and you can play it at work, too.
If you go there.
Believe me, I know.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, the thing is, that's the whole thing. It's so easy to just, you know, boot it up and just start playing. I mean, it takes you 2 seconds to go into it. It's a time sucker.
Yeah, it's very tempting. You have, like, 5 minutes to burn at work, you know, mm-hmm. before lunch or whatever. Very tempting to boot it up. 30 minutes later, you're like, yep. I guess I need to turn this off. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous stuff. It's amazing. So that's all I've got. Sorry. That's like 10 games I had to go through, so that's why it took so long. James, you're up.
All right, well, since no games came out in the last few weeks.
What?
Yeah, well, up until Brawl, nothing had come out in the last few weeks, really.
That's not true.
Well.
There was some DS stuff.
Oh, psh.
No More Heroes. Well, I guess that's more than a few weeks.
Yeah. I finally got a second round of hands-on with Ace Combat 6.
Okay.
And I found my arm tensing up this time as opposed to just my fingers. Which is frightening me in a way because I thought for sure I was having a heart attack. I love that game. Just, yeah. It's
even though it raises your blood pressure?
Yes, clearly. It's just visceral. It's a very, you know, you see things going on and you want to get there. And you know, you'll do whatever it takes to get there even if you're, you know, passing up something easy. You'll see action way out in the distance, and it's not just, you know, some pre-rendered fight scene. It's something really going on there. And you know that if you get there, you can change the dynamic of what's going on. It's a very strange feeling because you know that it's – I mean, it's not even like Star Fox where there could be fighting out in the distance. But, you know, it was interesting to watch it, but it wasn't anything really going on.
Yeah, it's not like it's real time. Kind of.
Right. This was, you know, real AI characters fighting each other, and getting there quickly would affect the outcome of what was going on. Or so you could see things being downed in the distance while you're trying to close in on it. And, you know, you could suddenly realize you're being tailed by something, or, you know, you'd have a siren go off and realize somebody's just locked on a missile or something. And it was just this very, every minute that you're not in the fight, you want to get there. And when you are there, it just goes by in this blur. And you realize you've just spent 20 minutes trying to chase down one plane while the entire city's being carpet bombed because your lazy ass is trying to find one fighter plane. But,
and, you know, actually, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about. I find that dogfighting in video games tends to not be very much fun to me because it feels like you're just flying circles around each other, and you'll finally make one tricky move and you'll get in like two shots that miss, and then it's another 2 or 3 minutes of flying around and fighting. You know, it feels like you're fighting the controls or fighting the physics, or it's just a very non-satisfying kind of combat to me.
Yep.
Is that not a problem in this
game?
Well,
that's what dogfighting is, really. I mean, that's the whole reality of a dogfight.
I just don't think it translates to a fun game.
There's dogfighting in, you know, Modern Warfare, which is essentially dead, but the fact that it's there is sort of video game-ish in and of itself. But there's usually a lot going on around you once you get into the middle of the fight. If you can get into the middle of the pack, there is at least something in every direction going on that you may bear down on. And sometimes you have to make the decision, do I break on this, you know, chase I'm in on somebody and go after that because it's easier, or do I hold with it and try to get this guy? And it is...
That sounds
and
good.
It is sort of a tough decision to make, especially because it took me a while to figure out how to cancel a lock, but that was just more me than anything. But trying to get things can be exciting in and of itself, but I could see that if you went for a really long time straight, that could get frustrating. I don't think I ever...
You know, James, I think you should go rent Heatseeker and do a comparison for the show.
Yeah, but I'll probably feel ill after I'm done. I've heard some not good things about that game.
Yeah, I like the idea of it. I think the controls are probably fun. It seems like they would be really fun the way they did the controls, but I'm not sure that the rest of it is really fully baked.
Well, the controls could be fun or they could be terrible. I'm not sure, you know, how they worked out.
Well, that's why we need you to find
out. Oh, okay.
Investigate,
yeah.
Please.
Besides that, I went back to my old PC games. I think the time I'll just go to the one I spent the most on, and it was the add-on to Medieval 2 Total War, the Kingdoms add-on.
Whoa, yeah. I didn't know you were this hardcore.
Yeah, well, the add-on's really, really unfair. You don't really get to appreciate how horribly one-sided, like, the colonization of the New World really was until you realize that having a horse basically gives you the ability to play God. And it just, you know, the game just never really got me with the add-on when I originally got it, so I went back to it and played it for a while. And it's, if you enjoy micromanagement, you'll love this game. But if you just want to get in and kill things, this game will bore the crap out of you.
And this is a real-time strategy, is that right?
The battles are real-time strategy, and I'd say they're probably the most epic battles of any game released ever. But, well, you can have up to 3,000 real units that
Jesus.
Are each being controlled
wow. Holy
on crap. The field at one time. And I have done it, and the computer gets really angry at you when you do it. But, yes, you can have 3,000 individual-looking characters on the screen swinging their weapons at other characters, and each battle between two units is being decided by independent dice rolls and things. And
that's cool, but, you know, I think one of my big problems with real-time strategy games, especially when they involve massive numbers of units like that, is that it's really not reasonable to ask the player to manage that level of combat. If you think about what happens in real war, you never have one commander over 3,000 troops. Not even close. You know, there are levels of, there's a hierarchy of authority, and then you have the general who doesn't deal with, like, particular units. He deals with other commanders below him and tells them what to do. And I just don't think the artificial intelligence in these real-time strategy games is up to that level where you can kind of count on the units commanding themselves, you know, or at least to put in some kind of avatar intermediary to that you can issue commands to them, and that way you don't have to click on this one unit and tell him to go there.
It really depended on what I was trying to do. If I felt like I was going to be, if I was on the defense, it really came down to me setting up my units how I wanted them before the battle, and then they'd basically take care of themselves. And if I needed to issue a large string of orders, I could just pause the game and issue them and let the game, and then unpause it, and then they'd go about fulfilling the orders I handed out to them.
That's not real-time at all, though.
Well, if you pause the game, it's not real-time. No, technically, but...
Well, I mean, like, in StarCraft, you can't pause the game and issue orders. You can pause the game and think about what you want to do, but you have to command in real-time.
Well, like I said,
that's part of
only
the
fighting
the
is
challenge.
Real-time in this game, though. The management phases are all turn-based.
Okay.
Because in this game, it really is putting together the army is what's important. And then, I mean, you can still lose if you act like a complete dumb shit. But if you put together a good army, you should probably win. But that's
wow.
How...
I thought my discussion of PC games would bore the audience,
yeah, well,
but this one's probably...
if you like...
Know. My stuff probably looks fascinating.
I don't know, man. Tower defense isn't exactly breaking news.
No, it's not. But it was for me. And I'm just saying, if you've been holding out, if you've heard about it, that's why.
Who the hell holds out on a free Flash game?
If you just don't think it's worth your time.
Oh,
you know?
Okay.
That's what I assumed, and it totally is. But
all right, well, I'm done.
Wow.
Okay. Lindemann,
okay, all right.
Wrap it up.
Well, what I've been playing, actually, I volunteered to grab Super Turrican off the Virtual Console, and so I've been playing that a little bit. And, you know,
yeah.
it's interesting. The reason why I jumped on that is because Turrican... If I'm even pronouncing that correctly, it's like almost some sort of mythical game series. Like, you know, it's done by Factor 5, and it's like supposedly kind of like a seminal action title or action series. And Super Turrican it's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty brainless though. I mean, but the one thing I will say, I mean, it's you know hopping out there. You're a little guy walking around a landscape, and all you're doing is shooting, and various. You know, various derivatives of that. You can lay bombs, you can do stuff like that. But what I got the biggest kick out of, first off, is that the music is so incredibly 80s. I think the game was from 93. I mean, the music is straight out of like a Top Gun movie or something. It's unbelievable.
That's what's funny about it. They thought Hasselhoff was cool like well into the
90s.
What I figured out is that apparently 93 in Germany was about like 1985 in the US. So that's and the music in Super Turrican completely reflects that. It was funny. My girlfriend walked in the room and she's like, "Wow, could this music be more 80s?" Because it's like, you know, I mean, you've got to hear it. It's great. The other thing,
I'm downloading this game now just for that music.
I downloaded it too, and I think what struck me was the sort of bizarre element of this freezing gun that you have, and I don't know. I found it to be sort of useless.
Yeah, I mean, the weapons, I mean, I just pretty much, I tried to, because I don't know, like, I didn't get too far into it, but there's generally, what, the red and the blue, and, you know, I tried to, like, you know, just kind of keep it simple. I like the red kind of spread shot, so that's kind of worked for me.
Because what I've always kind of heard Turrican described as is very much like along the lines of a Contra-style game, but with like a little dash of something extra, like maybe a bit Metroid. I mean, is there any validity to that at all? I mean, is there any kind of Metroid element to it?
Not too much that I saw. I mean, it's similar kind of like, I guess, in look and feel to Metroid. I mean, you're kind of going across these alien landscapes. But, you know, what the funny thing is, just to make one more comment about the music, is... What the funniest thing is that the music is always this really hopelessly upbeat, but you're going through these areas that are like, you know, all skulls and demonic sort of stuff, but the music is and I mean it's so funny, like, just, you know, it's like somebody developed the music and the actual levels completely on different sides of the planet, so.
They should have used Europe's final.
I think I'm just going to drop music from Turrican in this entire discussion.
To go back to what you were asking, Greg, about the Metroid thing, I think that's really overblown. There's really not – it doesn't really have anything to do with Metroid. And that the reason that people say that is because the levels are very large and open. Right. So it's not like – it's not a side-scroller, okay? It's not like Contra where you go from the left side of the stage to the right side of the stage. There's a lot of up and down. There's a lot of sort of circuitous movement around – you know, it's sort of maze-like. Sometimes there are a lot of different options of where to go, and it's not clear which one leads to the end of the stage. So you can go around and explore. There's a lot of extra lives that you can find. There's a lot of, like, secret platforms that are just hanging in the air. Like, do you remember the old Mickey Mouse game on NES where you just randomly shoot everywhere and you – and actually Mylan Secret Castle is the same way. You just randomly shoot everywhere and you'd find secret stuff just in the middle of the air. It's sort of like that where you'll shoot around and you'll find these little platforms and stuff will come out, or you can jump on the platform to get to a higher place. So there's some interesting stuff regarding that, but – you know, that's not what Metroid is about. Metroid is about upgrading your character and getting into areas that you couldn't get into before and stuff like that. There's none of that.
What I thought was really interesting is, you know, back in the day I used to play a lot of Commodore 64, and I never had an Amiga, but I kind of wanted one, so I kept track of the games. But the visual look of Super Turrican, it really reminds me of all of those late 80s, you know, Commodore 64, I must say the European ones, like all of those European games that were on the Commodore 64 and Amiga, because they're all garishly colorful. I'm thinking of games made by companies like US Gold and Ocean. They're all garishly colorful with massive sprites. Like, you know, everything is just huge and unrealistic and kind of cartoony. And it's just
Ocean did not go out of business soon enough for my case, thank you.
But yeah, that's exactly what Super Turrican reminds me of. It's like it could have been published by, you know, US Gold in like 1988 on the Commodore 64.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's what it reminds me of.
I could wish death
that is
on
the
everyone
heritage,
who
though,
worked
isn't
at
it?
Ocean.
Isn't that's where it started, the Turrican series.
I know it was
well.
On Amiga for a while. I don't know if it started on Commodore.
It's one of those like European systems.
I know there
obviously.
Were definitely Turricans on Amiga. For sure. So yeah, I mean, you're not. There's a reason that you're getting that vibe, because that's kind of where it comes from.
Yeah, because I booted it up and I was like, wow, this could be an Amiga game easily.
Yeah. Nice.
Here's a question for you. What is a Turrican?
That's their suit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I never knew that either, but they explained that at the start. I'm not sure if that was just
that's not
my
the guy's name.
Oh.
No.
Exposition.
Yeah, it's...
What is a Turk?
Yeah, it's like they're in their Turkin suit.
Well, John, did you play anything else?
Yeah, actually, the one game I'm reviewing right now is Spiderwick Chronicles for DS. And
you mean other than Life Signs?
Other than Life Signs. Well, I mean, Life Signs is kind of an ongoing effort.
Yeah.
My plan is to have
just make up Life Signs.
My plan is to have a review weekend and just knock both of these out and just that's it. I might actually retire my review crown, my two reviews a year. But anyways, yeah. So Spiderwick Chronicles for DS. I gotta say, you know, since it's based on a Nickelodeon property, I had less than high hopes for it, but it's actually quite good. It's kind of I'm not familiar with Spiderwick Chronicles at all, but the way this game plays is kind of like it's like an action RPG. It reminds me of Secret of Mana, kind of. Yeah, and that actually impressed me that I would even think to compare it to that. But I think the music is really good, and there's a lot of kind of hand-drawn graphics. Like, I mean, in terms of like in menus and maps and stuff like that. I mean, there's a lot more production value there than I really anticipated. There's a lot of wandering, and I think the combat can kind of like you have that same like Secret of Mana-ish overhead perspective for combat, but you can use you collect different sprites, they call it, because the whole thing is I think your grandfather found this other world kind of thing, and he put all of these sprites and all the various creatures that he found in that world into a book, and so there's kind of a Pokemon like spin to it where you can find new sprites and fairies and stuff and put them into this book. And then you can use them in battle. So, you know, they're like items. You can use them against enemies. But it's actually very cool and a lot more involved. There's a lot more to it than I thought there would be. So I was really impressed by that.
I've heard the movie's quite good also.
Really?
You know, I gotta say, this game sat in the reviews queue for a long time. And when I almost took it, and then I saw it was a Nickelodeon movie-based game. My email included a made-up arachnophobia that I suffer from.
Oh. Confessions.
I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm afraid of spiders. I can't review this game.
Yeah, well, I was very pleasantly surprised. That's all I've been playing for Nintendo stuff.
Okay, well, really long new business, but, you know, I expected that. That's why that's basically all we're doing this episode. So a couple things to wrap up. I think we're not going to take a break. We'll just plow on through because we're close to the end now. But for VC Mondays, other than Super Turrican, which was last week and John and I already talked about, this week we have two import games, Mylan's Doki Doki Adventure. I think it's Do-Re-Mi Mylan yeah. Doki Doki Adventure. Awesome. That is
English.
A sequel to Mylan's Secret Castle. And so, of course, I had to download it. And it actually doesn't have anything to do with Mylan's Secret Castle. I mean, the story and the characters are the same, and you control this little boy who blows bubbles, but the gameplay is actually totally different. It's more like Super Mario World, I would say.
Right.
I've heard very good things. Side-scrolling thing.
Yeah, I've heard very good things about how this kind of stacks up with some of the sort of platforming greats on the Super NES from various places. This actually is very good, even though there was obviously a glut of that kind of game on the system.
Yeah, I think this is the kind of game that Super Nintendo does well, sort of natively. And I've only played it for like 30 minutes, but overall, I'd say so far, I like it a lot. I mean, the first world is easy, but as you get towards the end of it, it starts to pick up in difficulty, and like the first couple levels of the second world are pretty hard. So it's not as easy as I expected, and the music is very good, the graphics are nice, the controls are fine, and the game has sort of an interesting element to it. I mean, the way that you fight enemies is you blow bubbles at them, and then you touch them and they float off. It's just like, it's exactly like Bubble Bobble. And so I thought, oh, that's kind of cute. I guess they were trying to think of like the least violent way you could dispatch a bad guy. You know, you could just blow a bubble around him and push him off the screen. And
I mean, that's funny, though, that you mentioned that, because that's reminding me of the one thing that really stuck out to me on the press release here, is that, you know, it's trying so hard to be non-aggressive, but on its little quick little sort of one-liner about what content's in the game after its rating, it says alcohol reference.
Yeah, well, not only that, dude, and I don't know what that's referring to yet, but not only that, but there's a mini game that's just like Duck Hunt, and all you do is move a cursor around and you shoot these birds that are flying by, and you shoot them and they fall off the screen dead. So
that's fine. I hate birds anyway.
The contrast there just blew me away, that, you know, the game is apparently gone out of their way to make it so nonviolent, and then it has this mini game where you just shoot birds with apparently a gun. So anyway, it's pretty strange,
and then possibly get liquored up at some point and go on a rampage.
Yeah.
Does it have the same kind of puzzles as the first game? Because I remember the first game wasn't too hard, but I remember there were some puzzles that were absolutely impossible.
That's because of the translation,
yeah,
possibly. Like, and you don't have to worry about that, because there is no translation for this one.
Yes.
They're charging you an extra dollar for it, because it's an import game, but they've put absolutely no work into the translation. It's a simple game. You don't need the exposition, I don't think. And I spent a few minutes reading through the operations manual, you know, in the pause menu, and that cleared up a lot of questions I had about what was going on. So I think that's worthwhile. They did. You can tell that they put some time into the online manual and making sure that you understand what's going on. There's even a hint that, like, there's a part of the game where you get to an icy place and you can't proceed, and so you need to go back to a previous level and go in this person's house, and they'll give you an item that you need. So that's the kind of thing that, like, if you don't read Japanese, you'd have a really hard time figuring out. But they knew that, so they put it in there. So I think there was some thought put into how this was done, even though they did not take the effort to translate the game. But I think it's charming. If you are really into 2D platformers on Super Nintendo, then this is really good, actually. I'd say it's worth it. The other game this week is Puyo Puyo 2, which is also a Japan-only game. That's for Genesis. And did any of you guys download this yet?
Mm-mm. No, one would assume it's just like Puyo Puyo.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're already like two or three. There's Kirby's Avalanche, and there's Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine. Mm-hmm. So I can't imagine this is very much different. And there's
virtual
also
console,
that Pac-Man game,
more
which is
puzzles,
very similar to Puyo Puyo. So,
Pack Attack, was it, or something?
Yeah.
Pack Attack.
So this seems kind of redundant, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's some upgrades to it that make it worthwhile.
It's getting to the point where the virtual console is either a brawler, a horizontal shooter, or a Puyo Puyo game.
Yeah.
Well,
and that's about it.
Yeah, I don't understand, of all the games they could import, why import another Puyo Puyo? I mean, seriously, it's just stupid.
And especially because they cost extra. You know, these other games are $8, and they're in English. This one's in Japanese, and it costs $9, and it's probably the same thing, so I don't
must
know.
Must be some sort of purists thing or something. They think there's some really hardcore Puyo Puyo guys out there that don't want Robotnik
Kirby. I gotta think that it's just probably really cheap for them to translate it, so they can sell it at a premium, but it costs them nothing to
translate it.
No, that happens, because I don't know whether the US got this, but over here we got Mario's Super Picross, which did not receive any translation, for instance. I mean, they really haven't translated anything, I don't think, because even Sin and Punishment wasn't the word that they'd already translated that anyway.
Didn't Billy say
that on last week's podcast that was true?
Yeah, the game was intended to be released in the US pretty much as is with the Japanese release.
Yeah,
they were just going to change the menu.
It's obviously fairly trivial, the text anyway. But the point being that
the English voice acting was always
there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the point being that there has never been any precedent for additional localization work. So I guess that's one of the criteria. A criteria is, can we release this without doing any localization?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, the nearest I can figure why we got another Puyo Puyo game was that there weren't any TG-16 shooters to bring over from Japan this week.
I doubt that.
Yeah.
They're just out.
Oh, there's plenty of them out there.
Final
Soldier, Gradius 2, there's loads.
Yeah, and see, actually,
are there any
Hudson
more Thunders?
Hudson made Mylan's Doki Doki Adventure, so Hudson still got a game in this week. Maybe they decided to take a break from
Do we have any more
shooters.
Thunders? This is important. Do we have any more Thunders?
That's really all anybody cares about.
Any more Thunders to be tapped.
Demons of Thunder. Right. I don't know. Anyway, that's Virtual Console. Interesting stuff there. There's a Target Terror trailer, and I was told that this had to be in the show. So let's.
Yes, it does have to be in the show. Yes. Let me tell you this right now. Having seen that trailer, I will tell everyone now, I am more than willing to surrender every civil liberty I have to be protected from that game. That is some sort of piece of work.
It's like, it looks like, unbelievable. It looks to me like Pit Fighter and Duck Hunter had some crazy, some sickening offspring.
That's a good way to put it.
That is really, yeah, succinct and absolutely evocative.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I mentioned this trailer said it was it had the little thing on there that said it was lifelike, mild, for like, you know, in terms of, you know, and like meanwhile you're like yeah, killing people, you know, and like blood spurting out of their heads, and they're pictures of people. Lifelike violence.
Yeah, well, I think that, to be honest, I am convinced, convinced that it's an entirely ironic thing. Because there's absolutely nothing lifelike about it at all.
No, it's not mild.
And yet it is not mild in any way. I mean, it is, you know, geysers of blood and, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous. But how is it lifelike, you know? It's not. So,
to be fair, I think the entire game is ironic, but I'm not sure that really excuses
the development staff's not
that
smart.
But I'm just saying that should the ratings be ironic for an ironic game?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, the Andy Milonakis show is stupid as hell. But you can tell there's a subtext of, yes, there's a reason that it's stupid. You know, there's an intelligence behind it working in the background. And you could almost say that for Jackass even. And I don't know, for Target Terror, I've yet to see that. I'm pretty skeptical.
No, I'm pretty sure the intelligence in the background was simply a lack of intelligence in the background.
Well, I'll say that the graphics are better than I expected.
Yeah.
No, they're not.
They are, actually. Based on the screenshots, they're actually better than I expected from the screenshots. Anytime the background moves, you know, and you can kind of see the environment moving with the camera, I thought, actually, that doesn't look 20 years old. You know, that part actually looks okay.
It's only like 6.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, that Sylvester Stallone arcade game did that, but that didn't save it from looking like ass.
I mean, I really enjoyed the fact that it looks like it's been ripped straight off the 3DO. That's what I love about it.
Yeah.
That's what I really appreciate.
Exactly.
Well, I should point out that not only is this, quote, mild violence, but just watching the trailer, there's at least 7 instances of someone's head just completely exploding.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, coming off their body.
And it's not mild.
Yeah.
It's not mild in any way. It's like there's just a blood mushroom cloud that pops up off their neck.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I guess it must be a bit like what the American No More Heroes is like. Instead of stylized shell shading, it's like digitized mess.
It's much worse than No More Heroes.
Well, again, I have to kind of question what the market is for this, because I am actually a fan of Maximum Enforcers and Area 51 and stuff like that, which this is clearly like a continuation of, although far removed chronologically. And the thing
and
is,
quality.
Though, even though I really like Area 51 and I play it all the time at the arcade, if it's there and it's like a quarter, I'll play it. I would never pay $30 for it to take it home, even if it came with a gun. You know, even if I could play it with a good controller, I'm not interested in sitting in my house and playing Area 51.
Yeah.
I wasn't back when that was new, and I'm certainly not now in the present day. And Target Terror is literally like, it looks like a 10 or 15 year old game.
Yep.
And that's from a gameplay perspective, not just graphically, but it is a throwback to these old arcade games, and I don't really see why anybody would want to play those in the comfort of their own homes.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I thought of was Pit Fighter. And that's ancient.
Ancient. Yeah.
Yeah,
Pit Fighter's also awful.
Yes.
Yes.
One of
the worst
fighting games ever made.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the worst light gun games ever made. What's your point?
Anyway, who knows?
Well, one thing, I have a theory about this game. They're releasing it at $30 just so they can mark it down to $15, and then they're going to try to sell it to people who like irony of bad games.
Yeah.
This game is being sold to members of our forums.
Probably,
this is being sold to our forum members. That's it. 100% of the owners of Target Terror will be members of the Nintendo World Report.
Unfortunately, their business model
forums.
Is dependent on Chiron buying it five times.
They should buy advertising.
You know what's funny?
The
there's a thread
they don't need
about
to.
This trailer. There's a thread about this trailer, and even Chiron goes, "I'm not buying this."
Yeah, he says that
that's
now.
A curse.
That's
it's
that,
over for
that's
this game.
Death right there.
It's over for our discussion of this game. It's over for this
for
episode. Let me wrap up by asking our dear listeners to send us some listener mail. We haven't gotten very much, and it's probably my fault for forgetting to mention the address last week on the N64 special. But we need to catch up on listener mail, so give us some good ideas. Next week, we probably won't be able to do new business for an hour and a half, so we're going to need your help coming up with content for this. So send us some good questions. That's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I want to plug our beloved sister podcast, Radio Trivia. The most recent episode is all about the N64, and two IPs out of town, so I haven't asked him yet if this was like on purpose or if he was planning to do this, and it was just pure coincidence that it came out the same week as RFN's N64 episode. But anyway, it worked out for the best, so you should check that out if you don't already. That's awesome stuff over there. And I want to plug the music for this podcast, other than last week where James put in some N64 music. The music from the show comes from a band called Jason Ricci and New Blood. And I mention them occasionally, and they're in the article, but some of you probably don't read the article. Please check them out. They have an awesome album called Rocket Number 9. It's on iTunes. And someone sent me a YouTube link a few days ago of them playing a live show, and I've seen these guys live many times. Actually, I'm going to see them this weekend live here in Colorado, and they're absolutely amazing. And I'm going to put up a link to this video in the article, and maybe James, you can put it on the Enhanced podcast or whatever, if anybody uses that. Go check out this video. You'll be blown away. These guys are amazing.
Just
want to thank them for their permission to use their music on the show. It helps a lot. I think we're one of the few gaming podcasts that doesn't use generic GarageBand music. So, very proud of that fact. All right, that's the show. Thanks, guys. It was nice to have you back. Do a good normal
episode.
Oh, sure
it was. You say that now, but then when in Guy Kroll and Stephen Totilo call next week, that's it. We're dropped.
My phones are lighting up. Next week we have Gersman, Garnett Lee, and In Guy Kroll. And
I'm not editing that.
Yeah. You're
that's
protesting,
editing, Johnny.
That's okay. I'll get Andrew Pfister to edit it for me. You know.
There it is. Drop some more names there, Johnny.
Man, I just hit me to knocking down my door to be on this show.
It's just constant hurt from you, isn't it, Johnny?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
First to question my Enhanced podcasts, and now you're replacing me.
I'm a cruel, abusive man. I'm sorry.
Lords of Thunder episode 2 next week, gentlemen.
Yep, we're bringing it back.
See, now you're going to get everybody excited.
Lords of Thunder.
All right, that's the show. See you next week. Bye.
Bye. Later.
Good evening. I am your host, James Jones. It is my pleasure to bring you the first in what we hope will be a long-running series entitled Great Moments in our Radio Free Nintendo History. This series is intended to highlight some of the most infamous moments of Radio Free Nintendo. Today's moment is perhaps the most infamous of any exchange ever to occur during the show. In it, the host, Evan Birchfield, asks his panel, which includes our current host, Jonathan Metz, Stan Ferguson, and some other guy, whether or not pre-ordering the Wii was a good idea. Let's listen in.
Pre-orders are going on right now, or at least they were, at EB Games and GameStop and other various outlets, and apparently Wii has already been pre-ordered out. Now, some of us are sitting here thinking, should we have pre-ordered? So I want to get all your guys' thoughts, and whoever has an opinion, just throw it out there.
No! No! No!
So, pretty much
a waste of time!
Yeah.
So, what's the reason for that, guys?
Because you can walk into a Walmart, pick one up, and leave.
Now, here's the best part. You can probably walk into a GameStop and pick one up.
There's a million of them.
Even if you have ethical problems with Walmart, don't worry. You know, you're not going to have trouble. Look, there are 1 million units on launch day in North America. That's twice as many as they had for GameCube. And you could walk into places on GameCube launch day and pick up one.